and welcome to Comic School, Everything Around Me, a podcast within a podcast about life and stuff. And look, I don't know, guys. I don't even know. Not important. Let's get to this thing. I'm Chris. I'm your host, your podcast pal. With me today, as in the last several times, which I'm having a lot of fun with having you here to do this, is my friend Matt.
Hey.
We're going to talk about some comic stuff this week, answer your questions, see what's going on. So I had a number of things that I kind of wanted to talk about in the world of comics, specifically related to comic things I read in the last week. But also, we had some stuff that we had like kind of started to talk about elsewhere. And I was like, oh, we should save this and talk about it on a podcast. Which is kind of the curse of doing something like this, is that it's hard to have, if a conversation comes up that's like interesting for something that you do a podcast about, you start like, everything starts going like, whoa, save this.
Sit on it.
Yeah, let's sit on this until we can record it. And it's weird. And so then it feels like you're kind of forcing yourself to have these conversations that are like, what's something I'm never going to want to talk about on the podcast? Like, what's, no, don't talk about Batman right now. Let's just talk about the weather and
gardening.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, I was also going to say, like, well, Matt, what's been going on with you since last week?
So Memphis, I don't know if you would have seen it or not. I don't know if the rest of the world knows. Memphis got hit by a bad storm and lost power. Both of us did lost power for a couple of days.
Some people still don't have power.
Yeah. About 30,000 people in Memphis still without power. And even when we got our power back after a couple of days, the internet did not come back with it. So just trying to figure out what to do with our time.
Yeah. What to do in the darkness. Thankfully, now you said you weren't prepared for iPad wise.
Yeah.
You weren't prepared. Luckily for me, though, I keep more stuff on my iPad than I could ever read in, like, probably my entire lifetime. If I devoted all my time just to trying to read all the stuff on my iPad, I don't think I could still get through it. So I had plenty of options. And yet, I was still going like, I see that there's this thing is on sale or whatever. It's like, oh, this just came out. I wish I could go ahead and get that, but I guess I can't till the power comes back on.
I'll definitely have to store more stuff to it. I'm used to, I think that first generation iPad didn't have much storage on it. And so I've tried to, as soon as I'm done reading a thing, I'll delete it or not try to save too much stuff there. But yeah, I'm going to have some backup, backup catalog.
I used to do this thing where I would, if there was something I knew I really liked, like let's say All-Star Superman, which I've bought every way you possibly can, you know, like I have all of the issues. I have every collection they've put out of it. I bought it on Comixology. But like I would like All-Star Superman. I would go, I know I love this. This is the thing I'm always going to want to have like at the ready to read.
Right.
But I would just go, all right, I'm just going to keep the first issue on the iPad. And because, you know, then when you get to the end of an issue, it goes like, oh, if you've already bought the next issue, it just has that thing on there where it's like, okay, do you want to read the next one? And I was like, so that way I can just like hit that and then it'll download the next one for whenever I go to reread this. And the problem with that is you end up then where you've just got like a ton of first issues.
Right.
And you go like, oh, I want to read the, guess I better move on to the next one issue, you know, or like the first chapter in some arc that you really liked. And so I end up just doing that over and over. But I just got a new iPad in the last couple months because my old one was finally like, it was a first generation one.
Yeah.
And finally was just like, no more, please.
It's a headache to try to navigate it and stuff over and over again.
Just like, it was ready to give out. It's like, look, I've done a good job for you here for quite a while. But, and this new one's awesome because it's like, I can draw on it like and really feel like I'm drawing on it, which is so cool. And it's like, it's definitely like a learning curve to kind of getting like used to this different kind of feeling. But yeah, I've done some stuff on it like where I'm like, this looks basically like what it would look like if I had done it, you know, on paper like penciled and inked it on. Like they can't see this, but I'll let you see this. Like I did this all on there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it's like,
it looks the same as
this. Yeah. I don't feel like it looks, if anything, I feel like it probably looks better than it would have if I had done it in real life, because there were things in there that I like was able to go back and after, you know, kind of, if I had just inked it normal, it would have happened. And I would have gone like, I might have seen this later and gone like, oh, I wish I could fix that, but not good. Yeah. You know, or it's just like, it's already on there. But with this, I could like go, oh, wait, I can just erase this, even though it was the quote unquote inks. And you guys can't see this, but Patreon people will be getting this in the mail. It's a print of Groot. So you've got that to look forward to, people that are a part of the Patreon.
This segment brought to you by Apple
iPad. Oh, look, man, I'm just saying, it's felt pretty magical. I will say though, I went through like 5 different drawing apps before I found one that I thought like that felt good.
What's this one called?
The one that I'm using now is called, I think it's called Medibang, like M-E-D-I and then big B-A-N-G. And it's like, it feels very, like it's not made by native English speakers. Gotcha. It feels like because a lot of the stuff in it feels like talks about manga. Like nothing talks about comics or anything like that. It's all just like all of the stuff refers to manga, and it feels like something maybe that was made by like an Asian company and then has been translated over. But man, it's great. And some of the other ones are cool too, but they just didn't feel right for whatever reason. Right. This one is just has felt very, it felt like it was finally the one where I was like, oh, okay, this feels good. And I mean, you know, like when I first, but anyway, not important. Everybody get an iPad. So we have that going. We had that ice storm, not ice storm. I'm thinking of the other big storm.
Yeah.
Wind storm.
Big mem storm.
Hashtag mem storm. If you want to see some pretty gnarly pictures of trees and stuff all knocked over, look at that on Twitter. So what else?
I've been reading. Yeah. So, I mean, comics wise, I've been reading Batman, Tom King's Batman Rebirth.
And you're digging it.
I like it.
Now, the thing that I had to keep stopping myself from saying while we would start to talk about this earlier was, I am a big fan of Tom King, and so I was excited, like, oh man, Tom King on Batman. And I was like, I was pretty excited about Rebirth in general, just kind of like going into it, like hearing some of the announcements. I was like, I'm cautiously optimistic about all this. But I was like, man, Tom King on Batman, that could be awesome. And then when I read it, I was like, just didn't like quite click for me. And I was, it doesn't hurt that they're putting it out twice a month. So it's like really easy to go like, well, let's see what happens next. Let's see what happens next. How far into it are you?
I've read the first arc. So if that's 6-7 issues,
okay.
Right before Monsterman.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's like the, what is that? Like I Am Gotham or something?
Mm-hmm. The one that's the two superpowered
Gotham characters. Gotham Girl or whatever. Mm-hmm. My big problem I felt like was, or not problem, I don't know. A lot of the writing I felt like wasn't clicking for me. And then there was an issue after, like drawn by somebody else. I can't remember who drew this, like another issue. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Issue 5 or 6, there's a fill-in.
Yeah. It's like a fill-in. And I liked it way more. And then I was thinking like, oh, was I really just like not enjoying this, right? Feeling like I didn't like the writing because of how much I disliked the art, because if I never read another comic drawn by David Finch,
it might have been Ivan Rice that filled in.
Yeah, I think that's who it was.
Looked great.
Yeah, and I was like, and so I tried to imagine in those early. I tried to like kind of go back and look at some of those earlier issues that David Finch had drawn. I just hate his style, man. I hate that, like, just where everything looks dirty.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like just ugh. You just want to. Nothing looks pleasing to me with his art. I mean, no offense if you like it. That's, you know, people listening, if you're a big David Finch fan, that's fine. It's just not for me. But I tried to like imagine some of those pages and just look at them and go like, would I like this way more if Chris Somney was drawing it?
Well, of course.
And I was like, I bet I would, you know, or if somebody who's like a really just an artist whose style really appeals to me. I was like, would that maybe make this story feel... But there was just parts in there where I was going like, how Batman's steering a plane with ropes, you know, like in that. And I was just something about it felt not quite, it wasn't clicking for me. I'm not sure what it is, but tell me what you liked about it.
Yeah, what did I like about it? I think I did like the writing. The art, it didn't take away too much for me. I don't hate David Finch. I don't love him. I'm kind of in the middle on him. I think, yeah, his stuff on Ultimate Marvel, which is where I first saw him doing work. And also,
what you didn't read any of that Avengers stuff that he was doing with David with
he did Avengers Disassembled.
Brian Michael Bendis as well.
Yeah, I think I thought that was okay, and then he did Ultimate X-Men maybe with Bendis, and then Ultimatum, with Jeff Loeb, which is who knows what to hate about that, but it's just all around a big
Where do you even start?
Pile of want to just forget that even happened. it didn't take away too much for me, but when Ivan Reis did that fill-in issue, it was head and shoulders better.
Yeah. And there was different art. It wasn't David Finch on the Monster Men issues either, was it?
I don't know. Oh, I've not done those ones yet.
Oh, okay.
But Tom King, I liked. I guess he was bringing to bear. So in that first issue, is that kind of realizing. Batman's realizing his shortcomings, his mortality. He's thinking about the future. And whereas normally Batman's go-to is, I don't trust anybody. You see him kind of trying to step out and be like, okay, maybe I should give this new superpowered couple the benefit of the doubt. And they could be a big help if they're be good guys. And he tries, he puts himself out there. And of course it doesn't go well. But
doesn't work out quite like he'd hoped.
Yeah, I've been enjoying it so far.
Okay. Well, I mean, and certainly if anyone else is able to enjoy it in spite of or even because of David Finch's art, more power to him. But I was just going, like, it just, I don't know. And maybe he was the right artist for that story since, like, I don't know. Some of the stuff that's happened since then, I think I slipped into an Irish accent for just a second there by accident. The stuff with, I think the storyline's called I Am Bane, I Am Suicide, and then I Am Bane. But the I Am Suicide one, where it's like basically Batman putting together like a Suicide Squad style team to go after Bane, because Amanda Waller, gives him this mission to do this thing, which you haven't gotten to that yet, but that's like what's next. And that's not spoiling anything. It's just like Amanda Waller needs him to go after Bane for some reason. That's a different art team and style. And it's like, yeah, maybe they're just kind of putting it together based on sort of what they think the story calls for. But I enjoyed those issues a lot more. And the further his Batman has gone, I think the more I've liked it. But I was surprised when I first, when I started reading it and I was like, I really like this guy. I'm excited for him to write Batman. Mm-hmm. Even though I don't like David Finch, I'm like, let's see where this goes. Or, I was still looking forward to reading it and then just going like, oh, why don't I like this? And I guess it also is like it bothers me when I don't like something, but I'm not sure why. Like, it's just, I can't.
It's just not clicking.
Yeah, when I'm going like, I feel like I should like this, or there's ingredients here that I really should like. And it's kind of like, it's easy to just, when you like something, you don't worry about why you like it.
Yeah.
You're just going like, this is fun, I'm having a good time. And then, maybe I should go back and reread it. See if it, like, I think we talked about this at one point, but that Patrick Gleason, Peter Tomasi, Superman book. Took a while to click for me. So maybe if I go back and reread that Batman stuff. But that stuff, did have the advantage even of having artists that I really liked drawing.
Right.
And like, I was not at all interested in like having to read those David Finch stuff again. But anyway.
I know what else I read. I read the first arc on Titans Rebirth Wally West.
How's that?
Abnett wrote it. Mm-hmm. It didn't grab me. It was okay. And
is Brett Booth the artist on that?
Yes.
See, that's another one where I'm like, if I never have to read a Brett Booth comic, I'm fine with that.
Which
sucks because I really like the Titans. Wally is my favorite Flash of all time. Like, I would love to love that book, but then I look at it and I'm just like, ooh.
Yeah, it picks up right after Rebirth number one, and why Wally was outside reality is Abracadabra, the villain, had somehow made him disappear from reality, and made everybody forget him. And so he's the villain of that first arc. And the Titans come together. And
they're saying that Wally's the one. They're saying that Abracadabra is the one that made Wally disappear?
Yeah.
And, as opposed to...
Right. And so by being outside of reality, that's why Wally had this unique perspective of seeing those 10 years taken away by Dr. Manhattan. And in that Titans arc, there are little nods to that. I want to say, like, there's little bits where, like, Abracadabra's like looking at his watch face after he's been punched in the nose and the blood spatters drip, just like the Watchman clock. And there's little kind of nods to it. But I think, it's not Dr. Manhattan that took Wally out of the time stream. He was already out of the time stream, or already out of reality, outside looking in because of something Abracadabra did. And that gave him a unique perspective to see something's wrong. I need to get in, get back.
I got
to
get back.
Everybody. I got to get back. And similar to... Like kind of with Barry, if he touches you, there's a little spark and then you remember him. So he does that Teach of the Titans, and that gets you, you know, in the first couple issues, the band's back together. And then
I think I read that Rebirth issue, but that was it.
It's skippable. I'd skip it.
But that stinks, because it's like, man, these are characters I care about and that I want to read about.
Yeah.
And then... Yeah.
Unless you just love Abracadabra. He makes like an evil magic doppelganger version of the Titans that they have to fight. So they're going up against like classic versions of themselves.
That sounds great. But then I think about but then I imagine Brett Booth drawing it. I can sort of just like see it in my head, like what that would look like, and go, that's a great idea. Let me think now. If Chris Somney was drawing, I hate that it's like there's so well, not hate's probably not the right word, but it's just like there's so many comics now where I catch myself just going, like, what would this look like if Chris Somney drew it? Or like, what would this look like if Stuart Eminem drew it? Sure is a shame we haven't gotten further on that cloning technology. Get some more of these guys,
right?
I had over let's see, this came out last week, I think, but I just read it. Earlier this week while the power was out. But I read that Venom number 150.
Okay.
Which is basically like they're reestablishing Eddie Brock as Venom. Like it was for the last while now. It's been...
Flash.
Yeah, Flash Thompson. Being like a sort of military-looking Venom with machine guns and stuff.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
He was on the Guardians of the Galaxy, and then he was like with the Space Knights or something, like Rom and the Space Knight, even though Rom now is like at IDW. So I don't know how the legal stuff on all that works out.
I think as long as they don't say Rom specifically, the rest of the Space Knights stuff they can use.
Okay, Marvel's... Okay. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. I wonder if the Dire Wraiths, which were like... were those a ROM character?
But Marvel can use the Dire Wraiths.
Okay.
Because they're in, Marvel.
They were like, Marvel made them up?
Maybe.
Who knows? Yeah, okay, anyway. He was doing that for a minute. But then I guess in the last month or two, the only reason I got this issue was because Trad Moore was doing the art on it.
Okay.
And like I saw someone post like a couple panels online last week of just like some random shots from just going like, look at this art is amazing. And I saw those and I was like, well, I want to read that. he's an amazing artist. But, and the issue was like very, the story is kind of like, it's fine, but it's also like nothing especially special.
It's 150, but it's the first issue of this new direction for Venom.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they may have already... I don't know what happened in the issue before that, but it seems like it's not like completely new. It's not like Eddie Brock just re-showed up in this one. It doesn't seem like. Because it starts off with your, like, from his point of view, and Flash Thompson is nowhere to be seen until there's, like, a backup story that's, like, a flashback to, I guess, in continuity a couple weeks ago. I have to assume that the issue... I feel like it says somewhere on the cover of something, or on one of the last issues, something with Eddie Brock. Not important.
Okay.
But it is very much intended to be like a jumping on point, because it's like, here, we're back to this. We're back to Eddie Brock being Venom, and Eddie Brock and Venom getting back together. And the art was just, what I was going to say is the story is very much just like, it's totally fine, but it's very much like a, we're establishing what's going on. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like it's trying to reinvent the wheel. It's just going like, we need you to understand what's happening.
Now. I think that's how Titans felt too. Like we're getting back to a status quo. This is what is going to be the team going forward.
And, the issue is pretty cool if you are a big Venom fan, because it's also like, if you've been a big Venom fan for a long time, it's got the main story is what's going on now. And then it's got like a flashback to like a little bit ago with whatever's happening with Flash Thompson. And then there's like a 90s flashback backup story that's drawn by Ron Lim.
Okay.
And like, and written by, who did it? I want to say David Michelin, like one of those like 90s Spider-Man writers. And it's like, you know, just an untold original Venom story
from that era.
Yeah. Of him like sort of like, I guess kind of giving you a glimpse into like the early days of Venom and how he sort of became that lethal protector as opposed to just a Spider-Man bad guy. Which was kind of neat just to see like Ron Lim doing something in that kind of 90s style. Yeah.
Venom in the 90s was wild too, because they would never just give Venom his own book, but he got how many miniseries?
Yeah, right.
Felt like dozens of miniseries.
Well, and that's the thing. It's funny. I was like, how did they get to this 150 number? And in the back of the, there's like a cover gallery in the back of every Venom comic. And it's basically they're counting all of those miniseries as, but to see through, and it was just funny kind of like going through all those covers and like remembering how many of those had like were so just burned into my brain, like, oh, remember that one?
That first that Lethal Protector, that first miniseries, I guess that was the first one. It's definitely burned into my memory. But then there was a lot that I did not read.
Well, and it's also, it was funny, like seeing some of that early stuff and just going like, oh man, I remember these covers so vividly. And then you hit a point in the 2000s where I was going like, ooh, this was a dark time for comics. Just like seeing like what some of those covers look like and going, even if I didn't remember like
was the that specific, Humberto Ramos doing, was he on it for a while there?
At some point,
or at least an art style very similar to his.
But there was also, there's some places where it was like very, just, it was not a good look. Just sort of like the cover, not just like the, not just the art itself, but like the way it was colored and the way the covers were like laid out, you know, what was sort of fashionable at the time. And I was just going like, oh, I'm glad we got out of that. And it was just kind of interesting to see this like sort of little trip to like, you can through, you can tell exactly sort of what, where comics were in all of these different, through these 150 covers or whatever. But yeah, it's all like a bunch of from there. They're adding all of those up to get to this now 150, but it's actually issue like number 7 of this new series.
Okay.
But they're just, I assume they're just moving forward from this. Like the next issue will be 151.
Yeah, I think so. And I think Marvel's doing that on a lot of their books coming up. They're going to go back to,
will be very confusing,
classic numbering
for normal people. But I assume normal people mostly now are just going like waiting for, we'll just go like, where's the collection of this? But the Tradmore's art was just incredible. Oh, I will say though, like that 90s Ron Lim flashback, they tried to give it like the coloring style sort of like an old, like a retro feel.
Okay.
I mean, I was like, comics did not look like this in the 90s. Like they're trying to make the page sort of like, sort of like it's the whole page looks kind of like older. Like, so the, it's not white on, you know, the white is not. And I was just going like, I get what you're going for here, but 90s comics did not look like this. They looked worse than this. The art was just absolutely incredible. And I was like, oh, man, if he keeps drawing this, I would, this is a Venom comic I could very much be into reading. But it's also, and I said, I kind of said something about this on Twitter. I didn't call it anything about out by name, but I will now since I've been talking about it for so long. His art is absolutely amazing. It's just phenomenal. But there was stuff in there where some of his page layout where I was going like, this looks neat in a, you know, in a vacuum, like this kind of looks neat, but it's like, it really does not help the flow of the story the way you have done some of the stuff. And then there were other things. I've noticed that he is like a real big, he's, I guess this is like one of his tricks, not a trick. I mean, cause it's something that's, it's a trick kind of implies that it's something, you'd like a, a way to get out of doing something, whatever. And this is clearly super labor intensive. He does these weird things where, like he sets up a grid on the, you know, the ground or the background or something. And then like, as it's getting warped, it's like all these weird, this doesn't make any sense at all. Like there's a picture he did of Magneto I could try to find where he was like, where he illustrated sort of like all these different, like the waves of magnetism. And it looked like it just took forever to draw. And there's some stuff in this where it looks like it just took forever to draw, for other than going like, oh, that looks kind of neat. That looks like a lot of detail, but it's like, you could have also just had like the regular ground and gotten this page done.
Did it hurt the readability?
That part didn't hurt the readability at all, but I was like, this looked like it took forever. And, I would like to see this guy drawing comics regularly. Mm-hmm. And I go like, if you could knock this issue out in a month and you put all this stuff, and I'm not saying like, oh, you don't need backgrounds, you don't need this. What, you know, I mean, though I think sometimes people waste time with backgrounds when it's like in some stuff, it's like not at all. It does not help the story at all. Like we've talked about this, like with Brian Hitch, it's like, you don't have to draw the whole city, dude. Like, focus on what's important.
Who's the guy that does Shaolin Cowboy?
Oh, the guy, Jeff Darrow. Like,
everything is detailed. Every square centimeter is,
I guess it's one thing
detailed.
If you're Jeff Darrow, where it's like, that's your whole
thing.
That is
the style.
That's his thing. Yeah, it's like everything is like just super meticulous detail. But sometimes I'm just going like, man, I'd like to see you drawing. You have skills, like with Trad Moore and like with Brian Hitch and like with some of these guys, it's like you have skill beyond being able to draw super meticulous buildings. Like, I want to see you tell this. I would love to see you drawing comics more regularly, I guess is what I'm saying. Cause it's like his character work, like, and some of these panels where it's like the emotion he's getting across on Eddie Brock's face as he's having this, like, he's going through this like sort of personal torment of like, what's happening. Basically, it's like about this relationship he has with Venom and how it seems like they kind of can't get away from each other. And it's like, it's an interesting, I don't know necessarily how far the writer is intending to go with some of this stuff, but it's like a really, it, you know, you could treat it as a pretty interesting metaphor for people's, you know, people like in abusive relationships and stuff like that. And it's like, you know, there's, it's really interesting, and like depending on how far they want to go with it, or they could just kind of keep it straight up superhero-y kind of stuff, and it would still be, and it's great too. But I'm going like, he does such good stuff. Like the action is so, there's so much energy coming off of it and stuff. I think of like Jack Kirby, like how much he would get done in a month.
Tons.
You know, like when there was a point when he's doing like, you know, 4 books a month. And his stuff never looked like it lacked for anything, but he also didn't like draw stuff. I mean, he drew super intricate things sometimes, but also like, if it doesn't need it, you don't need this. Don't waste time on that. And I just,
would make the stuff he did render so dynamic that you didn't need an overly detailed background to make it pop.
And I just see like, I can show you this thing that I'm talking about.
Look at Venom later.
Yeah. Well, but and I just go like, man, knock this off. Draw, like, no one's paying. I mean, even if we see that, the most that's going to happen is we see that and we go like, man, that looks like it's complicated to draw. It took a long time. But if you're looking at that, you're not paying attention to what's actually happening.
It takes you out of the story.
Yeah, it's like, I guess it does kind of take you out of the story a little bit. Because if I was paying attention to like how he had drawn the ground for this thing, and it's like what's happening in the big action, it's like a, you know, a big panel of Venom fighting Scorpion, and it's like a whole dramatic big, like, Venom's doing this thing like jumping out of the way of the tail, and like it's like one big shot, but it's like you've got him transforming from like Eddie Brock running towards, it's like it's a series of images, you know, of him like, what do you call that when it's like one pan? It's just one shot, but you can see multiple things. You know,
I don't know the name for it, but I know
they do it with Spider-Man all the time, where it's like you're seeing how he's flipping around.
Right.
Same deal. He's like the first shot, you know, it's like the first part is him like starting to turn into Venom as he's running. And then he's like halfway transformed, like ducking under something. And then he's totally transformed, like up in the air. And then the last part is him hitting, you know, whatever. And that's what I'm supposed to be paying attention to. And I'm looking at the ground.
Yeah.
Because like, why did he take so long on this? So I guess it does kind of take you out of it. All of that is to say, when the question I asked on Twitter was like, at what point does page layout, you know, trying to do visually impressive page layouts, do you go, this isn't, I don't care how complicated this page layout is. If it's hurting how I'm reading it.
Yeah.
If it's not servicing the story, then like what, there's no point.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't really have anywhere I'm going with that, but I wanted to talk. The issue's great though. If people want to check it out.
Some artists do seem like they do that. They mess with the layout just to do it, just to do something different. Mike Diodato, he'll do that where the panels will be like, they're at an angle that they don't need to be at, but just to spice it up a little bit, just so you don't have too many pages in a row that look the same. And it's neat.
Sometimes.
But it doesn't maybe add enough to it that it's, I don't know.
Well, and it's like, it's one thing when you've got artists who are known for that kind of thing and use it in a really interesting way. Well, I mean, it's like, if you've just got people standing around talking, doing a crazy, like, it doesn't really suit the story to do like some kind of crazy, confusing, convoluted page layout just to go like, this makes it look cool. Or, you know,
something that might be their way. They think just people sitting around talking will look boring.
Yeah. And I'm not saying this was, you know, these things were necessarily in, but well, if you've got like big action going on and you make the action harder to like, to follow because the page layout is so confusing, that takes away from the point of the big action. So it's like, I guess the point is like, don't do it unless you really know what you're doing. And I'm definitely not saying that like these amazing artists don't know what they're doing, but I don't know. I had like a comic artist say to me that he's heard of other artists, you know, saying that sometimes they do those really interesting layouts and stuff on some pages because then it makes that page more, you know, more like a more appealing sale.
Selling the original art.
Yeah, and it's like, boy, that's a bummer.
And that's a big income source for them. Or maybe that's a page someone would take a picture of and post online. Be like, wow, check this out. And that gives a little more attention to them.
Yeah, but but that's like, that doesn't serve the story at all, which is what you're ultimately supposed to be doing. I don't know. You know, I mean, where do you...
It probably wasn't in the script.
Make this really crazy looking. Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, I certainly don't begrudge anybody like trying to make more money from this thing that they spend a long time on. But also you're going like, there's no end to this. You know, it's just kind of like random thoughts. If you guys have any thoughts on it, certainly let us hear what you think. But I think about somebody like, you know, Darwin Cook. So much of his stuff, not that he didn't ever do, but it's like you look at New Frontier and like so much of that is just like, here we go. Just here's this grid. Right. And it's like that. I said something like this on Twitter. I think it's like, I want to be lost in the story, not lost trying to like pay attention to your art.
Right.
Obviously I want comics that look good. I would rather all my comics look like they're drawn really well, by artists that I like, since I was complaining about people earlier. But also it's like, man, just get us involved in the story. And then I feel like that's got way more power than just going like, look at how cool this one page is. And like, oh, what was happening in that story?
I think that's the classic 9-panel grid kind of forces it just to be about the story.
Yeah.
I think Tom King's likes using that 9-panel grid.
Yeah.
on Batman and on Omega Men.
Yeah.
He had some, and then he'll do interesting things with it. He'll play with it. He'll kind of shake it up, but it's more, about the story.
Just like, get us lost in that story, and those pages will mean so much more to us than if they just look really cool by themselves. But you can't, you know, you don't really know when you don't even remember what was happening in the story, or it's like you don't even, you can't tell what's going on the page, like even if it looks really cool.
We just read that Secret Empire, the most recent Secret Empire.
Let's talk about that now.
Is it
Secret Empire number 3?
Sorrentino?
Andrea Sorrentino, something like that. Yeah,
but his art is another one of those where it's like there is a lot going on here and a lot of style, but and I like looking at it, and I think it would be good on some story, but as far as
there's some weird choices
for communicating for it to be their big event book and a lot of different stuff's going on to keep up with.
And the fact that it's like each issue of this thing, or like maybe every couple issues, is drawn by like different people, it all feels like very, I know they're trying to do it to make sure that it all comes out on time, but it's like, it feels very like disjointed.
Yeah.
And even though they're going like, oh, this part is, you know, maybe part of their thinking is like, oh, we're having this artist do this part because that feels like, that's the tone of this issue. Right. But it's like some of that stuff, you know, you go from Daniel Acuna with that in the first issue or whatever.
And Steve McNiven.
Yeah. And it's just,
this is so different from that.
Yeah. And even if you just were like, okay, the stuff that's happening at Space feels very different. But like,
but they're not doing that.
Daniel Acuna drew that entire first issue, you know, where it's like stuff on the ground and stuff. And it's like, and you think about like, you know, issue to issue as we're reading it, just trying to like keep up with what's happening, you go, maybe it doesn't even register as much. But imagine like if you were reading this as a trade and like you were not that knowledgeable about comics, you just heard this was like a big deal thing and you go to read it and it's just like,
be jarring.
It would be like you were just changing channels. It'd be like if you were changing channels and all of the channels were different productions of, you know, like The Wizard of Oz. And so it's like and it's all like playing in the exact same order.
Mm-hmm.
So like when you change the channel, you're in the middle of Follow the Yellow Brick Road, but each time you change the channel, it's a different set of actors and like the, you know, the way it looks is just totally different. And you'd be like, this is why would anyone do this? I don't know. There's my hot take on that. I'm just full of hot takes today, apparently.
If you open up that book and you've got, Steve McNiven, I think, doing the Zero issue, and you're in for something totally different as you get a few issues in. Which, it's not good or bad. It's just wildly different, and I don't know, man.
I don't know. It might be bad.
I don't know if it's best for what they're trying to do.
It doesn't seem like it's best for, like, trying to put together a cohesive story. Yeah. I don't mind the parts where it's like, when they're showing this other, let's say spoilers now for Secret Empire 3. When they're showing this other, this is also a spoiler for Secret Empire number 2, which came out 2 weeks ago, I guess.
Probably.
When they're showing this other Steve Rogers who has shown up, bearded Steve Rogers, those parts looking totally different. It's like, okay.
That's cool. Yeah.
That's fine.
Who knows where he is?
Yeah. But that's some other kind of story. And there's also something like, who knows what's going on with that lady getting bit by something. And it had like a very sort of surreal feel to it. And then you go straight from that to, I felt like that had almost like a fantasy feel.
Yeah.
And then you go from like that to that like weirdly, like sort of weird photorealistic, the Sorrentino art, like,
but with weird color tones.
Yeah, where it's like, it looks like everyone is based on a real person, kind of. Like, and everything is like very naturalistic poses. It's not like exaggerated stuff. But then the coloring is just wild.
Yeah.
And
the panels will be stars and stuff.
Yeah, and it's just odd.
It's odd.
Very odd.
Well, I would say this is issue 3 of Secret Empire, but counting 0 on Free Comic Book Day, the 5th issue of the event.
Oh, boy.
But this is, it's going to 10 issues or 12.
And who knows if that Free Comic Book Day one counts as part of that 10.
Yeah, like, I don't think it does. I bet it'll be 10, not counting 0 and Free Comic Book Day. But anyway, this is the first one where I really felt like, if you're not reading the tie-in miniseries, like, there's little throwaway references to
stuff that's going on.
Yeah, stuff with. Anyway, where I felt
stuff
like.
Stuff with Sam Wilson and with Ant-Man.
And Natasha's training her team. It just feels like there's stuff going on off panel that probably is happening in the miniseries. And
yeah. Well, supposedly the other big thing that happened this week, I don't know if you saw it. Do you want me to. This would be a bit of a spoiler, but are you going to read this week's Deadpool?
No.
All right. Well, so in this week's Deadpool, do you care?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. And folks, this is a big spoiler if it hasn't already been completely spoiled, because it was already completely spoiled for me. I didn't even read it. The internet spoiled it for me. But in this week's Deadpool, which is a very important tie-in issue, is that Phil Coulson has found out, basically he's the one who discovered early on that Captain America was not right okay. with Captain America. You know, basically because he's such a big fan of Captain right. America, he could tell something wasn't right. He's been like kind of behind the scenes trying to figure out what was going on. And then right before everything goes down, he figures out that something's not right. And then all the stuff goes down from like the first issue where Cap takes over, and he's like on the run trying to figure out what's going on and like what to do, whatever.
This is all happening in the Deadpool or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
As far as I know, this is like where it's happened. I mean, you're kind of getting flashbacks of like what's happened. And then, but Captain America sends Deadpool after him, and just to kill him, like says, you know, this is important, you know, Wade, I trust you, you know, and it's yeah. like Captain America telling you that and there's even a part in there where, they're like, Coulson's trying to like reason with him. He's like, look, something's wrong with Captain America. I don't know what the deal, it's like, this is not right. You know, I'm not, mm-hmm. I'm not a traitor. I'm, you know, whatever. And, you know, and he says something, which is funny because it's like, this is the exact kind of thing I know that I have said about stuff like in the original Civil War. And then like when the Civil War movie came out, where it's like Captain America is the guy who's right.
Yeah.
It's like whatever side Captain America's on is the side we're yeah. supposed to be. He's like, and he says something to Coulson like that, where he's like, anytime something like this happens, how many times has like the guy that's against Captain America been right? right? Which kind of makes you go like, that's exactly why this is kind of an interesting story right. idea, even though the handling of it has been, you know, like we talked about.
Anyway. So in that one, Wade's fallen in line with Steve. He's a
man. Because he thinks, he's like, he has no reason to believe that Captain America, and he's right. like got such a hero thing for Captain right. America that it's just like, and you know, the fact that Captain America like invited him into the Avengers after he'd been
right.
like, you know, like.
So I'm a little bit behind on Uncanny Avengers, but the most recent arc I read, he was starting to get a little disillusioned with Cap because, yeah, Cap had kicked him and Rogue off the team and they're having to do their own thing
no idea.
With Cable and stuff. And
yeah.
But anyway.
But apparently but then Deadpool kills him. Cause like,
so Coulson,
yeah,
is dead.
Unless you know,
unless he's not.
Of course, he's died in the movies too. So, anyway, I was gonna say this issue was the first issue of Secret Empire though, where I felt like as I was reading it, I really was kind of able to just get lost in what the story was, and not think so much about everything else. Mm-hmm. And that the fact that some of that stuff where I felt like I didn't know exactly what was going on, or it was like kind of, it's like, I didn't even think about it like, oh, that's probably in the tie-ins. I was just like, oh, there's a lot of moving parts going on. There's like, I was just kind of surprised. Yeah. Cause some of the other issues have really not sat well with me, but this is the first one where I was like, huh. And even with the stuff we talked about with the art, I was kind of going like, man, what's going to happen?
And they're giving you hope with that, the mysterious bearded Cap who, I don't, is he maybe like buried deep down inside?
Well, the fact that this issue, they kept like, there was so many points where they kept saying stuff like, oh, this is because of the cosmic cube. We can fix him. We've got to save him.
Right.
All that stuff. And I feel like there was not any of that in some of those earlier issues where it was like, just, nope, this is Captain America and he's bad now. And this is what's happening. Yeah. Deal with it.
Yeah.
And then this one, they're like, you've got Iron Man and like all these people going like, no, we know what's wrong now. We can fix this.
Let's put together a plan.
We can get him back. And I'm sure they're going to exploit that hopeful feeling, to our shock and terror.
It'll roller coaster up and down.
Yeah. Cause we're only on issue 3 of 10. So I don't know. Curious to see what happens next. So I do not have a hard time trusting Marvel with anything right now, but I'm curious. I'm certainly curious. Also, what did you think of that announcement they made that after Secret Empire, they're not going to do any more big events for at least 18 months?
Sure, but it's hard to believe it. Yeah. It seems like we've heard that before.
Well, especially since then, like I saw somebody posted this on Twitter where it was like they had the two screen caps of the two articles, you know, just posted within like a little bit of each other, where one was like that headline, no crossover, you know, no big events for 18 months. And then coming in September, Venomverse.
Right.
And speaking of Venom, right. Which this is all, I assume that this new issue is part of like leading up to that.
I'd be all about it. I like the self-contained stories. It does seem like we're gone a little crazy with events. It used to be just one big summer event.
Yeah.
And now it's like a spring, summer, fall,
winter event. Well, and none of them feel like they matter, because they all just feel like they're leading into the next one. If it was just if they were all big events, you know, you could have multiple ones a year, but if they felt like they really did lead to some kind of like satisfying beginning, middle, end, conclusion kind of thing, where you go like, okay, now we're moving on to the next, where it wasn't just like, oh, that's just setting up.
Right.
The original sin is just setting up
the next thing.
Yeah. You know, instead of being its own thing, like its own big story, where you go like, man, when this is all collected, I'll be able to read this and feel like I've really got, because none of them feel like that. They all just feel like
a Secret Empire just ended up being set up for Dark Reign.
And it's just
ended up being set up for Siege, which.
Yeah. Just one thing after another. And it's just, okay. All right. You win. I don't care about any of it. That's your goal, right?
Yeah.
Trying to make us feel like none of this matters.
I'd be excited if it's just more self-contained stuff. Yeah, so it feels like it matters more. It feels
Well, I feel like Venomverse, I mean, that tweet is obviously funny, but it's like Venomverse, even though it is like a crossover kind of thing, it feels like it's just going to be in that little
Venom family or Spider-Man family.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Which I go, okay, I can kind of be, well, and that also used to be the thing. There didn't even used to be like one big event every year. It used to be like there would be, oh, we've got the big X-Men event this year, and maybe the Avengers will show up for part of that if it's a big enough deal. Mm-hmm. But then it's like, and then we got the big Spider-Man story. Like, you could have these, I guess they maybe felt like a little more separate, instead of everything was like, oh, the whole universe has got to get involved.
And if they just wouldn't do that, I think that would help a lot too. DC, I think DC did a good job during the New 52. There wasn't a whole lot of big crossover events. There's Forever Evil, but I don't remember too much else other than that. And even
that,
with this upcoming,
that was a noise of how much I hated Forever Evil. But yeah,
is that David Finch?
I think he drew some of that. Yeah.
But then with the upcoming Doomsday Clock, it's gonna be totally self-contained. It's just its own thing. And I think that's better if you can just have it all self-contained.
Yeah. And we've talked a lot about Marvel and DC, but I want to talk about for a moment, not Marvel or DC in comics. I want to talk about Valiant, who is a company I absolutely love, and we don't ever talk about them because it doesn't come. Well, I don't think you're like reading any of this stuff.
Yeah, not at all.
They just did this, big, Exo Manowar relaunch. I think it was the third issue just came out. I think it was last week. And, The Valiant characters, I had like a passing knowledge of them back when they were sort of like in that 90s Valiant period. Mm-hmm. When they also had like the gold key characters like Solar and Magnus, Robot Fighter, who I think is like one of the best comic titles and like character ideas ever. It's like a guy who punches apart and like karate chops apart robots in the future. Like, that's so awesome. And then like Turok Dinosaur Hunter, and they all have good like subtitles. Like, you know, they're Magnus Robot Fighter, Turok Dinosaur Hunter, Solar Man of the Atom.
Yeah.
You know, like that stuff. I'm just like, yeah, these all
iconic sounding.
Yeah. But of course, the current Valiant doesn't have any of those characters. So Dynamite has those characters right now. But the current Valiant, since their relaunch, everything of theirs that I have read, I have enjoyed. And the problem now is that they're putting out so much good stuff, I can't even keep up with it all.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like once a year, they do a Humble Bundle, which I cannot endorse enough. Anytime Valiant does one of these Humble Bundles, or they really regularly do their Comixology sales mm-hmm. for stuff, get on some of these. I've really totally enjoyed everything I've read.
And so the Humble Bundle not through Comixology? No. You have to get a different reader?
No, it's still like, oh, wait. They'll usually work on like the Kindle app or like, when you do with comics, it'll offer it in like several different file types, that will work either in, you know, with like,
a PDF.
iBooks. Yeah. It'll be like a PDF or like something that'll work in iBooks or in like Kindle or something like that. Or like you can get one of the like specifically comic readers, which I've got one that I like that, I can't think of the name of. but it's a really good one.
I've got one too. I can't think of it, what it is, but yeah.
But, the reason I could talk about this stuff like for forever. But they just, I specifically want to talk about EXO Manowar, 'cause I just read the first three issues of that, in the last couple days, and taking him in like a totally kind of interesting, like putting him in a different situation. He's not on Earth anymore. He's off on some other planet, just trying to have like a normal life. He's not,
what is EXO Manowar's deal?
Thank you for asking. I'm dying to talk about these characters. So EXO Manowar's deal is he's back in like, you know, Roman times. He's a basically like a barbarian, not barbarian, but well, yeah, a barbarian. I felt like I meant caveman. I pictured a caveman when I said barbarian, which is not what I meant.
Right.
But he's basically like a sort of more primitive, less civilized warrior type.
Okay.
And he gets kidnapped by a bunch of aliens. They take a bunch of his people. They just drop down, and this is like in, you know, super long ago. So they just pick him up and take off to space with him, just like slave labor kind of. And he ends up breaking free and getting a hold of this thing called the Exo Armor, which is this crazy, you know, nigh unlimited power.
Okay.
Armor that's like sentient, and it was this race of spider looking aliens. It was like this holy relic to them, and like they would have their greatest warriors try to like put it on, and it would just kill them. But he puts it on and can wear it, and it's like it's kind of a Venom thing there, where it's like it's sentient and like they work together.
So less like Iron Man armor, more like a symbiote kind of
thing. Yeah, but it's also very Iron Man esque in that it's, you know, it's super high tech armor, even though it was from like way in the past. And he ends up then dropped back into modern, somehow course of events, he comes back to Earth, and now he's in like modern day. And it's, you know, he's a barbarian with the like, it's like Conan in Iron Man armor.
Yeah.
With a dash of It's Alive.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, imagine that. And so he's like brute force with this, like, but he's a good guy. I mean, he wants to do the right thing. He wants to help people. He doesn't like to see people being oppressed. And he gets involved with all kinds of stuff. If I could, man, they did a mini series called The Valiant. That was sort of the first thing that kind of like brought all their heroes together. That's just awesome. And I think it's like Jeff Lemire and Matt Kent wrote it. And then
I like Jeff Lemire.
Yeah. And Jeff Lemire is writing like a bunch of this Valiant stuff. And Matt Kent also, and like a lot of like Peter Milligan and like, Robert Mendetti and, just a lot of writers where you go like, oh, I know them.
Yeah.
You know? They've done some good stuff I liked. But some of these guys are people that you'd, you know, see at DC and stuff, and you'd feel like, these are good writers. Why don't I like these stories more? And I feel like at Valiant, they sort of have like a little more creative freedom, and it right. really shows. And it's like, it comes across and how excited they are for the product. Paulo Rivera did the art for the Valiant. That would be a great starting place for anybody if you wanted to grab, like, kind of like learn.
He's fantastic.
Yeah, if you wanted to kind of learn about those characters. And I'll say that some of the design stuff for the Valiant book was by our good friend Dylan Todd. So that doesn't hurt either, because you know it's going to, like, things look good in there.
I remember seeing Paolo posting, I think, pictures. Is there a Bloodshot?
Bloodshot.
Is that a character?
Yeah. Which, another awesome character I could talk about. The Valiant, and they put that trade, and or like, it's like just a 4-issue miniseries. They put that on sale in Comixology all the time. I think it was even just on sale like last week or something, which, sorry, it's the sale's already gone. But
there'll be another one.
Yeah, there'll be another one. That's super, like, and that's such a great primer just to go, like, gives you a great, you got the hiccups again?
Yeah, they keep coming back.
It's like a great thing to just kind of introduce you to those characters in that world. Super good. And they usually put that in those Humble Bundles, so too.
You could read The Valiant not knowing anything about any of these characters.
Absolutely.
That's the place and to
it
start.
It would make you just go like, man, these guys are cool. I like all these people. Matt had the hiccups before earlier when we went to lunch, and then like he really felt like they've been gone for most of this, and
they're back.
They're back.
I hate to say it too, I might have to do a part two.
Okay.
Come back and do some of this stuff. I got a piano recital to get to.
All right, gang. Well, we did have some questions. Exo Manowar, I'll just say, was great. These first three issues are really cool, kind of establishing what his new thing is going forward. And you should check them out. Great art, great story. See what you think. We'll get to this other stuff some other time, I guess. We'll see.
We'll come back, want to talk about some movie stuff.
Yeah, we had some movie stuff we want to talk about.
When we see each other again, we'll have both seen Wonder Woman.
That's right. So we were going to talk about Wonder Woman. Hopefully by then your hiccups will have stopped. All right, gang. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. All the stuff. Follow Matt on Twitter at XAMattDrain. Follow me on Twitter at TheChrisHaley. Follow the show at KICTM Podcast. Thank you so much to everyone who's left a review on iTunes and all that kind of thing. Go do that. The show is called Keep It Close to Me, in case you don't know. Somehow you found this and are listening to it and don't know that. I've got a Patreon, patreon.com/TheChrisHaley. Early episodes, free stuff in the mail, cool things, exclusive stuff, behind the scenes, all those kind of things. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. We'll get to your Twitter questions next time. And hopefully, Matt has got his hand over his mouth trying not to hiccup. So thanks, everybody, for listening. I'll just leave you with this. Double circle, the infinity, or what is it?
The interlocking, like, Olympic circle, kind of.
Okay, so that one is supposed to be... I've already forgotten. It's that easy to forget. All right. Let's see. What were the two things in the DM we were talking about? It was Fantastic Four and
Doctor Strange.
Okay. I think I got... Oh, my gosh. I cannot put this over here. Because then I keep having to turn. I'm going to have to do those, like, Michael Keaton Batman, like, turn, like, because he couldn't turn his head, you know?
Yeah, just like, full body turns.
Yeah.